The Creative Business Podcast is brought to you by Noosey. Online proposals made simple for creative businesses. Visit noosey.com to learn how your business can start winning more projects today.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Creative Business Podcast, the podcast that aims to help you build a better, more successful creative business. And hello, Marcus. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Nathan.
How was it?
Oh, it was fantastic. All my kids are grown and they all left the house about 6 p.m. And I think I fell asleep in front of the TV around 10:30. And my wife woke me up to give her a New Year's kiss at midnight. And then we went to bed and I slept soundly. So I would say it was uneventful, but maybe I'm just an old person now.
No, yeah, I think, yeah, mine wasn't any more exciting. I was in bed at 11:45. I couldn't even bother to wait those last 15 minutes. I got to 11:45 and I just said, that's enough. I've had enough. I'm going.
I know, especially if you're just watching it on television or, you know, you don't have a lot of people over. I don't know. When I was younger, it seemed like a big deal. Is that how it was for you? Maybe when you were a kid, was staying up a really important thing?
Yeah. And I think the more, at least for me as well, when I was younger, you know, and I'd go out drinking with my friends and stuff, and that, you know, that was a big thing. And I don't drink now, so that probably has a big, you know, a big effect on it as well. So back in the day, it was a huge night and I'd be suffering for like at least 2 days afterwards. But I think I'm happy. I'm quite happy to put that behind me now. So yeah, it's New Year's Eve is not high up there on my list of best nights of the year.
Yeah. And when I was young, I begged my parents to let me stay up. And when I was a teenager, I would be at some event. And when I was in my 20s, it sounds a little bit like I was maybe like you. We would always have people around or we were having a lot of liquid fun. And somewhere things changed. And it is funny because something that became so, you know, so important as a young person, if I were to have called myself, if the 40-year-old version of me called my 20-year-old self, I think my 20-year-old self would have hung up on him.
Like, I know. Yeah, I can relate to that. I know for a fact I would hang up on myself without a doubt because I wouldn't recognize myself now. There's no way. I would not recognize myself.
I would have told my friends at the pub. I would some old guy just called me and told me I should go home early. what an old man, you know.
What a dork. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it is funny because over time we see that our perspectives change on things, right? And I guess it's a natural evolution, but just as we're talking about it, it seems so clear that that's an area I hadn't really considered is what I think of as entertaining, what I think of as worth staying up for midnight. My daughter had a baby just, my daughter-in-law had a baby. She's going to kill me if I get that wrong. About 4 months ago, I had no problem staying up all night long in the waiting room. I didn't fall asleep. So it's not like I can't stay up all night. It's just that the reason has to be different.
Priorities. There's something that happens, I think, between for the majority of people, at least from the early 20s to perhaps the early 30s and 40s, maybe, where there's just this huge shift in what is a priority for you. And at least that's been the case for me anyway. And it's been pretty much monumental. I mean, I've still got loads of friends that still lead the life of a 20-year-old. But to be honest, they're probably far fewer than those who don't.
And I'll bet they regret it for more than a day or two afterwards.
Oh man, yeah, I bet the hangovers last more than 2 days now on a big one. I bet we're talking like a week hangover. Yeah. So.
And you know, Nathan, we've done it again. We've got this beautiful segue into our topic because how much of my early freelancing and contracting and agency career was spent just working so hard on the things I thought were important. And ignoring marketing and sales and like the dirty work stuff. Like I just wanted to build software.
Are you talking about sort of gaining authority for yourself as a freelancer, as a consultant, or?
Yeah, I thought that was like something that old people did. Like, I just thought, you know what, just do great work and people will recognize it and your clients will love you and they'll keep wanting to pay you more. It was kind of a naive 20-year-old view of the world.
To be honest, I didn't even know what, if you just, if you know, again, to go back to my 20-year-old self, if you'd have said to me, if you really want your business to take off, you need to start gaining a bit of authority within your space, I would have said, what are you talking about? what is authority? What is my space? You know, I'm a designer. Leave me alone, man.
That's right. Don't you see I'm making art?
Yeah, completely. I'm just, I'm rock and rolling. Just leave me alone, man. So yeah, that wouldn't have made any sense to me back then. But I mean, we only have to look around now at, you know, we have a lot of friends who work in similar spaces, obviously within the creative space, be it in marketing, design, development, you know, coaching, just whatever field it is. And I think it's easy to see that the ones who have, should we say, taken that step up, step or two or three even up the ladder, are the ones that have been able to create this sense of authority about, you know, they know what they're speaking about, they know what they're doing, we should listen to them. And I think I can pretty much guarantee that they don't really have an awful lot of trouble finding work nowadays because of that.
Oh, I agree. Maybe we should step back. And so when we talk about authority, we're not talking about like government authority or parental authority or the authority of a boss. I just want to make sure that the 20-year-old version of myself who somewhere maybe has gotten in a time machine and has listened to this isn't saying, Marcus, what are you talking about? Well, I think when we're talking about authority in this case is we're talking about credibility. We're talking about the ability to be taken seriously as an expert in our field. We're talking about position, really acting, I think, acting in a way and helping others to see us as an expert who is worth paying, well, frankly, a lot of money to get a result for. That's what I think about when I consider this word authority. What comes to mind for you?
Yeah, I think you've pretty much defined what that means to me as well. Because I think, again, looking back, there were very, very, very few people who were working in MySpace in the world of design and development back sort of 10, 15 years ago, who were more than just that, who were more than just a designer. And the people that were, the people that had created this sort of sense of a figure of authority, of someone who was an expert in their space, but was seen, I think for me, somebody who has in inverted commas or whatever it's called in brackets is, somebody who has authority is someone who's seen, can be seen to be an authority even outside of their own small circle, because they've become so well known, maybe via speaking, via podcasts, via books, that they've actually become known to a wider audience than who might initially have been their intended audience. Does that make any sense? I mean, that for me is someone who has truly nailed the authority, the sort of the authority journey. Does that make any sense? Because I can think of loads of examples of people that maybe were developers back in the day. There's, what's the name of that bootstrapper? I can't remember her name now. Develop Perch, the CMS.
I'm not sure, but you're right that there's lots of examples where somebody who, and a lot of times, and again, I don't want to get too far ahead because I know we've got a lot of ideas on how people can build authority. But if we come back to why, the benefits of building authority for your freelancing business mean that you are, and you said this so well, Nathan, you're going to have a lot easier time finding clients, and you're going to have a lot easier time convincing the ones you do meet that you are a serious expert, that you are worth the money that you want and should charge them. And then the results they get are not going to be the results of a designer or a programmer who's just focused on doing the work, but as somebody who is an industry leader. And I think that that color, it's kind of like the difference between buying a Ford automobile. Here in the States, we have, you know, Ford is one of our big automakers. There's not a lot of prestige about buying a Ford. And you say, yeah, it's a fine car. Of course, Mercedes makes a much finer car. They both will get you to work. But how you feel about your purchase, I would say Mercedes has a much better sense of authority in the market that this is one of the best automobiles that you can buy. At least that's kind of the perception they have here in the States. And so therefore, when someone purchases it, the way they feel about their purchase really enhances their experience of using it. And I think it's the same when somebody hires you, whether you're a developer, a designer, a SEO person, whatever it is. If they feel they're hiring an expert who is an authority on it, they want to take your advice. They want to let you guide the conversation and the project. At least that's what I've found.
Yeah, because a lot of customers are pretty, you know, are scared when it comes to hiring someone, regardless of the sector that they are hiring in, because you may have a great portfolio and you may even have loads of great testimonials, etc., all the things you should have on your website, but there's still always that moment of fear for somebody who's hiring you for the first time, because you are an unknown, essentially. And all they can go off are the conversations you've had, the website, maybe the way you present yourself, et cetera, et cetera. And I think it's so much easier for a potential client to hire you when, okay, yes, you have that great portfolio and they can see you've done great work in the past, which is not always a huge indicator either of, you know, whether you are particularly great in your field. But if you can add to the fact as well that, hey, look, this guy, this designer, this developer is also the author of whatever the book might be, you know, also runs this podcast, is also a regular speaker on the, I don't know, whatever, the development circuit, you know, around, you know, the Northern Hemisphere or whatever the case might be, it's so much easier for them to feel confident in that hire rather than, I don't know, I'm taking a bit of a risk here on this freelance designer, this freelance developer. If you've got all those things behind you, it almost becomes I need to have this person, as opposed to should I or should I not, you know?
Exactly. Now, Nathan, now you're a big biker, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what brand of bike do you ride?
I ride a Santa Cruz and a Ridley.
And what's your what bike would you love to have?
A Santa Cruz and a Ridley.
Oh, great. Okay. So some people don't love to have the bikes they have. So I was just going to say, when you got your Santa Cruz, did you kind of brag about it to your friends? Were you excited to show people?
The Santa Cruz is kind of held at the very top of the market. And some people can look at you with hate in their eyes for having one. And they can also look at you with envy for having one as well. So yeah, it was, for me, it was a big step getting that Santa Cruz. So Santa Cruz was that bike that I aspired to have. So yeah, so coming from the other side, yeah, this was the bike I aspired to have. Yes, sure, I could have had, and I have had in the past, bikes that were not so great at this, not so great at that, but also I bought into the name. See, this is a big thing. Santa Cruz, the name is you're buying that trust. You're buying that authority. They have so much authority in the space that it's, you really, I mean, obviously I'm buying the bike, but you buy into the name, into the brand as well. And I think, yeah, that's, yeah, I don't even know if that's where you were going with that question.
No, it is. Right. I was going to say you told your friends, you bragged about it, you were proud of it. You couldn't wait to try it out. Your experience of riding it, you may have fallen over the first time, but you didn't blame the bike, because this was a Santa Cruz and this is the top end. And everybody knows they build amazing bikes, and whatever you got, you loved. And I think that we see that same example with our clients. If our clients hire us and we have authority, they want to brag about us to their friends. I started working with this amazing designer or this wonderful business coach or this whatever it is, right? And he's all over the internet, or I saw him at this big talk. And I think it just somehow enhances, it enhances the experience of the person receiving our service simply because of the authority our quote unquote brand name builds.
Oh, completely. And it also means as well, to go back to the Santa Cruz example, that you're willing to pay for that. There is no question that, you know, a Santa Cruz is going to cost you two or three times the price of any other bike. I'm generalizing, but I mean, along those lines. And it's exactly the same for that consultant that you're looking to work with, or that agency that you're looking to work with. If they have that brand recognition, if they have that authority in their space, you know that it's going to cost you two or three times or even more than, you know, Bob the Builder next door. But you also, you have no problem paying that either because of everything you've just said, you know, because you know that you are going to be working with someone who's genuinely going to be able to help your business, help your company, because you have complete faith in them for everything that they have going on in their lives. They just project it onto you.
That's right. You're an you're an object of desire, right? I was once talking to a potential client and they asked me how much my rates were, and I told them, and they gasped at how expensive I was. But instead of saying, "Well, you're a jerk," or "What a waste of my money," they said this: "I'm going to have to save up for that." And I just, I went away thinking, I've never been able to position. That was the first time I'd positioned myself in such a way as an authority that somebody who was considering, what do I do with my savings, could be like, oh, I want to take a trip. I want to buy a Santa Cruz, or I want to work with Marcus. Like, I became on that list of things they wanted to save up for.
I mean, yeah, I think we're both in complete agreement that being an authority in the space is going to do so much for your business. You know, whether if you're working at an agency or building an agency or a studio, or if you're, a solo consultant, it needs to be done. So, I mean, so what about some of the ways perhaps in which we can do this? We can build authority. Speaking from, because we know there's a huge list, but speaking from personal experience, let's start with you. I mean, what are some of the ways that you've helped yourself by building authority in a space? What are some of the things you've done?
Well, this was really hard for me because I am sort of an introvert. I'm just going to tell you, if you're listening to this and your gut is saying, "You can't do it, this is never going to work for me," or whatever else excuse, you just put that out of your mind for a second and believe that you can. And I'll tell you where I started. And I think it's a good place for anybody to start. I started a blog. I realized that is really dumb. Everybody's got one. I started writing in a more serious way where I thought, I don't want to just write to express my opinion. I want to write to teach something. So I started writing on Medium. That was actually one of the best things I did for my business. And then from there, I wasn't quite brave enough to put together a list. I didn't know why I'd ever want an email list. So I just started asking people I knew if I could come on their podcast and reaching out to podcasts I already listened to, like this one, and saying, "Hey, I'd love to come on and talk about this topic. Is that a problem your audience has?" Because those two things, because it was a little easier in some ways for me to talk a few years ago than it was for me to write. So those are the two areas. I just started writing on Medium, trying to write helpful articles to teach something. And I instantly found that anytime somebody is writing from a position of, "I want to teach something," and by the way, there doesn't have to be any readers to do this. You just have to write it this way. You instantly get this impression that the person who's writing must be an authority because they have something to say. They want to teach on this topic. And we're ingrained from little children that the expert stands at the front of the room, right? That experts are the ones who do the teaching in our society. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. How about you?
Yeah, I think this is probably a common theme as well. The number of people I've spoken to, the number of friends I have who work in the creative businesses, it's all began, and in many cases continues to be the case, that they write. You know, I contributed to Net Magazine in the UK last month on, they have this freelance question section where freelancers send in questions and they get a couple of panels of, you know, here goes the air quotes again, experts, myself being one of them, to help answer. And one of the things was, you know, how about moving from services into products, and what were the things that you weren't expecting. And one of the things I never would have expected, looking back when I was just a purely a freelance designer, that was all I did, was design. I never would have imagined I'd spend so much time writing. All the people I speak to, they just spend a lot of time writing. You know, you start with your blog posts. You might start with your clients, your customers. Certainly once you get a product, you will never stop writing. Books, you know, there's been a couple of books. We can talk about that as well. There's a lot of writing, and I think that's where it starts for a lot of people, because I think it can be difficult, and it is difficult, and it can take some people a very long time to write. I'm I'm tortoise slow when it comes to writing articles and anything else. It just takes me forever because I do a thousand revisions. I think it's the easiest place to start because you can see immediate results in one way or the other. And even if it's only just one person who leaves a comment saying, wow, you know, that really helped me. I think it can be a good kickoff. It can be a good start to other things. But I think, yeah, writing was definitely where it began for me. But I just never imagined in a million years that I would end up writing so much and actually grow to pretty much hate writing.
I completely agree. In fact, like honestly, improving my writing is one of my 2018 goals. And I mean, I've got a little book and I've got a couple other books in progress and I write a monthly article and I do a lot of writing. And I'm coming to the point where I think I've gotten over the hate and I'm into the enjoyment and I like the benefits, but it's still something that, for example, every time I post an article on Reddit, I get all this hate. I just always, maybe it's Reddit. No, it's me. But the problem is that I get misunderstood. And so this is an area of learning I want to improve. Like I want to be clearer in my writing. So if you feel like you're not good enough to start writing, you are. Start writing on something you know. Start writing, teaching through writing. And I think that's kind of the bent I would, it doesn't have to be highly opinionated. It doesn't have to be a rant. In fact, if you want to be seen as an expert, don't rant a lot, but instead write authentically either about your experiences or about what, or give advice, right? Teach something. It could be about your business, could be about a technique you're using. If you're a coder or designer, there's lots of things that people need to learn that you know. People that aren't as far along as you. Nathan, did you ever worry with all this writing that you were kind of giving away the secrets of your company that somebody else might come along and just steal that and then, you know, they'd be the expert?
Possibly in the very beginning, but I think I was lucky enough to connect with other freelancers early on as well. And I think that was probably via my writing as well, through my writing. So that's another plus. But I think, yeah, it was a concern in the beginning, but I never really went down the teaching road, at least not in the beginning, not until we got to Nusi and proposals. I wrote more about my experiences as a freelance designer, and I tended to be very honest about my experiences as a freelancer and things, experiences that I'd gone through and things that happened for me and not happened for me and my concerns about the future as a designer and things like that. So I was more about sharing my experiences as a freelancer rather than teaching, at least in the early days. So I think in that respect, it was a little bit different for me. But again, that definitely helped to get me seen more, at least by the freelancers at this point, because the newer freelancers would come along perhaps with some of the same worries, the same concerns, and see that, oh, well, you know, actually it seems that, you know, somebody further down the road is still going through these same fears and concerns and everything. So, you know, maybe it's not too bad. Maybe it's not too big of a problem. But yeah, that's how I started. And I didn't even really get into the whole sort of teaching thing until Nusi came along. And that was, you know, that was, at least that's how it is in my mind. Maybe I was teaching without sort of realizing it earlier.
Maybe you were just teaching that it's okay to, that it's a tough journey, right? That what you were doing was hard. And by, like you said, and I think I love what you just said. It's so important to be you. It's so important to be honest. The more honest and transparent you can be in your writing, I think the more you'll connect with people. And I'm sure that your willingness to be vulnerable and talk about the good and the bad meant that other people started to really connect with you, not just in a way of saying, oh, Nathan shows me how to do this, you know, Photoshop trick or the CSS thing or whatever, but wow, Nathan seems to be somebody who's really willing to share his experience, his journey that's really hard.
Yeah, quite possibly so, because that honest approach at the beginning. And like I said, in my mind, at least I wasn't teaching anything. That was what led to my first book, which was The Designer's Guide to Freelancing. And that was essentially a collection of those original essays, those original articles with extra chapters thrown in there as well. So it was more of a, this is an overall experience of, or my experience of being a freelance designer rather than do it this way, that way, and the other way. But definitely that first book. And I got to be honest, it was completely underwhelming for me because I'd heard about Nathan Barry, Paul Jarvis, obviously people that I was following. Paul Jarvis is a fantastic example of someone who has huge authority in the space because the guy just does not stop releasing products, writing books, talking on podcasts, speaking, great designer, fantastic example. Anyway, so go and follow Paul Jarvis if you don't mind swearing lots.
or rats. I think he enjoys rats.
You have to be okay with rats and swearing. But I released that book very, very underwhelming, the release. I didn't become a millionaire. I didn't sell thousands of copies, but it did create the desired result in the long run. It got my foot in the door, so to speak, as someone with a little bit of authority. You know, it was a little bit of authority. It wasn't a lot, but it was a little, and that was the starting point for me. So again, like you said, you know, don't worry about, oh, I'm a terrible writer. I shouldn't write. Nobody's going to want to listen to me. There will always be someone who's going to listen to you. Even if 99 out of 100 say you're rubbish, you can pretty much guarantee that there's going to be 1% that reads it and says, do you know what? I feel that way too. So
exactly. Even if I don't leave a comment, I still feel that way too. Okay, so we've got this idea of building authority. We're going to write. Maybe we're going to talk on a podcast. Heck, maybe we'll even start a YouTube channel if we're crazy or something else. How do we use this to generate leads? Because these two ideas are abstractly connected, and you and I can see through a long lens that there's a line of sight alignment here. But how do we actually get people to go from saying, wow, I stumbled upon this thing with Nathan and I liked it, and then I did something else, and now I want to connect with him and give him money. What does that look like? Because that's, at the end of the day, I know I want more money.
Well, I think it's a long game, but it doesn't have to be that long. it's a long game because you are planning for the future. You are trying to put all the ducks in a row. You know, there's going to be this point of convergence where all your books, your podcasts, your speaking, your training courses, your products end up crossing over in so many places online that it's going to be virtually impossible not to find you, not to trip over you and end up sprawled all over the top of you. But that is a long game. You know, it's going to take a long time to get all those things together. It's going to take a long time for anybody to maybe get around to finding those books, reading those books, you know, listening to those podcasts. But I think a large part of this is, and I hate to say it because I don't really know an awful lot about SEO, but a lot of it is going to come together via SEO because you are going to have all these things online. Somebody goes online, obviously, and searches for design consultant, New York, perhaps, or whatever the case might be. The more that you appear about, maybe if we be a bit more specific about increasing revenue for X type of business, if you've appeared on a podcast talking about exactly that topic, if you've written a book on exactly that topic, you know, if you have training courses on exactly that topic, of course your name is going to keep cropping up and cropping up and cropping up. And whether that's via Google or via a search engine, or whether that's via a personal recommendation as well, from somebody who's had a very similar, if not exact same problem, these things are all going to start coming together. And for example, if you talk about sort of niching down and how you can be perceived as an expert in your space, like one of the first people I would think of when somebody said to me, well, how can I learn more about that, would be sort of Philip Morgan. Why? Because, you know, Philip for the last few years has built his career around that exact same topic. And I'm sure if you went to Google now and typed in something along those lines, then Philip's name would probably crop up and you would probably see it come up from podcast episodes, from blog posts, from books, maybe even from testimonials from clients. You know, all these things would just all come together. But like I said, it's a long game because it takes a long time to get all this together. But at the same time, it can be equally as short. I mean, another friend of ours, Laura Elizabeth, who's working with Brennan Dunn now, she's a designer, but she's no longer just a designer, you know, because she's speaking, she's writing, she has products. And for her, I think it's quite a recent thing over the last couple of years. She's moved out of just being a designer, again, in air quotes, and into these other areas. And things have moved very quickly for her. She decided that she was going to start speaking. She decided that she was going to start sharing her work publicly as she was in the process of designing on Twitter. And people are reaching out to her left, right, and center saying, hey, I saw that design that you were working on for Brennan Dunn, or I saw you speaking at and you spoke about this. And in that sense, you know, it's the response has been very quick because it's immediate. You know, if I can see you speaking and you're speaking on a topic that concerns me, you know, I'm going to, after you finish speaking, I'm going to run up and grab you and say, hey, I need your help.
Right.
You know, the more places you are speaking about the same topic, the more places there are for people to find you. I think the long and short of it.
Very true. And the other thing I found, and I don't know if you noticed this as well, but when I had, when I was doing a lot of consulting work, like I had my little agency and things like that, if I had some pieces of content that were polished, I would meet somebody and a potential client, and I could send that to them. Or if I just had stumbled upon them and they had emailed me, the ability to turn around, for example, somebody had said like, oh, should we do a native application or an HTML5 application? This was quite a few years ago, but we had written a fairly long blog post contrasting the two ideas and sort of making a recommendation, and being able to immediately turn around and say, well, it's funny you ask, because, you know, I'd like to send you this thing we wrote that got really, you know, got good reviews or that seems to be useful. As soon as you can just turn around and do that, it gives you the impression, it gives them the impression that you are a consummate professional who's out there really thinking, really, really building authority, and that you've got something for them. So whether it's, you know, this idea of a, you know, should I as a client, like one of the best things I did for my business was I started writing from the perspective of my client's fears. You know, how do I best utilize a designer? What should I look for in a software firm? How do I know if my agency is any good? Should I build an HTML5 or a native app? What is the CEO SEO stuff anyway? And being able to meet somebody, and then when they had a question in that topic, just forward them an article. Sometimes we'd polish them into a nicely designed PDF. That even went farther into making it appear as though we were an authority on the subject.
I've heard that from so many different consultants over the years, and I used to do it as well myself. If there was a question that I had repeatedly, and I'd write about it, I'd always just link them up to that blog post and send them directly there. And in fact, what you were saying about writing from the side of your client, writing about their fears instead of us writing perhaps from our experience of things. I remember and this was going back a while now, but the number two search result in the UK, in Google UK, for freelance designer was a friend of mine. And it would always end up coming through almost always from a blog post that she'd written on about how to hire a freelance designer, which was obviously herself. Right. And in large thanks to that article, she was continuously number two for that search, how to hire a freelance designer in the UK. And you can imagine, I mean, number two in Google, that's huge. So, and I don't think she's ever struggled for getting work. So these things, writing from the other side, from the other point of view, can be very advantageous as well, I think so.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's one thing to sit across from the client and say, we get it. We've been where you are and you're taking a risk on us. It's another thing to have written a few articles that were, because in that one sentence, people tend to say, no, you don't. You're just trying to sell me something. But if you can send somebody an article about how to choose your, you know, a great mobile development firm, or how to know if your branding firm is on point or whatever, you're really going to get inside their head with that, because you know from the outside all the fears and worries and struggles and pains. You've seen it with multiple clients. So they're typically not hard articles to write either.
Completely. If you speak to enough clients, you're always going to get, you're going to get hundreds of ideas for what to write about.
That's right. Once you start, everything will just flood your brain with ideas you could write about.
And I'd recommend that as well, keeping an ongoing list of ideas. If you are going to start writing for your business and for yourself, I'd recommend just writing a list continually topped up of ideas. Every time something triggers an idea, or whatever, just jot it down. And even if it's not for now, to write about it for the future.
I do that. I agree 100%.
I guess we should probably finish. I mean, we've been here for a good while now, chops in a way. So we could keep going. I know we could. We haven't even got to sort of speaking really and training courses and products. And obviously you're there with your training courses. I'm here with my products. You know, we're probably shooting ourselves in the foot, you know, for not carrying on, but the day's got to move on.
Well, it does. And, you know, I'd love just, you know, if you're listening to this, I know Nathan and I would love to hear from you. We'd love to see something that a blog post or anything that you're doing is you're putting your foot out there. If you are taking those first steps to create authority, if you're putting yourselves out there to write or speak, send us the link, send it over to us. We'd love to look at it. I know I get excited when I see somebody who's decided to change the trajectory of their career in this way. And I know I'm happy to promote it and tweet it and that sort of stuff. And it also, Nathan, like if people want us to talk about a topic, can they write about that? Can they tell us what they'd like to hear?
Then yeah, definitely send us a line. You can, I think for now, what we'll do is send any emails you have to podcast@nusi.com. I think what we'll do in the very near future, maybe even in time for the next podcast, I'll set up a domain actually just for the Creative Business Podcast, because it doesn't actually exist at the moment. So don't go stealing that domain. and we'll get an email going via there so we can sort it out. But for now, yeah, podcast@nusi.com. Any ideas, suggestions, feedback you have, and obviously you can guarantee that you will receive an answer from either Marcus or myself. And and of course, you know, if you are enjoying the show, drop by iTunes and leave us a review, and of course subscribe so you don't miss out on any of the upcoming episodes. So I guess that's it, right, for this week, Marcus?
We'll be back next week, right?
We will be. So if anybody is listening in Spain, happy Kings, and we will be back next Tuesday.
Have a great weekend.
Cheers, Marcus. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.